All right, so what do we do about it? Well, there's several different things that you can do about it. That turns out to be very important. You need to work with somebody who is very knowledgeable about diet, because you have to walk a fine line. That is, you want to try to starve the candida without reducing the person's blood sugar levels so low that they're not able to function. All right, and it's really a trade-off. And I have seen and read, just like many of you have, every kind of diet, every kind of program and plan. I've probably tried out most of them myself. And let me tell you where I am. As of January the 13th, 1993, subject to new information, which comes up all the time. The diet's important, but I don't think it's important that we be obsessive about it. Let me tell you the broad dietary guidelines for Candida control. Number one, you must avoid the simple carbohydrates. Sugar, sucrose, fructose, galactose, the simple sugars. Glucose is a 6-carbon sugar, okay? Fructose, the fruit sugar, which you see in fruits, is a 12-carbon sugar. They're the same thing. All the body has to do is cut one little bond, and you've converted fructose instantly to glucose. So eating honey or molasses does not buy you anything, all right? Those simple sugars, which produce such readily available glucose, is pure food for Candida, and that stuff must be avoided, especially the real sweet fruits like dates, raisins, figs, grapes, things of that sort. People can get away with a kiwi or a grapefruit, a tart grapefruit. And I even let patients have a banana once or twice a week, but on the green side, not on the brown side. All right? So you need to stay away from feeding the candida directly with these simple carbohydrates, and depend for your energy sources on complex carbohydrates, which are primarily pastas, starches. All right? Alcohol is a simple sugar. And I will tell you, I'm a psychologist, I'm a licensed psychologist also, and I do maintain a psychotherapeutic practice. And I work with a lot of patients with chemical dependency problems, and I'll tell you that most of them have candidiasis. 90% of people in AA groups have candidiasis, and their cravings for alcohol are cravings for sugar. Alcohol is a pure sugar. It's the simplest form of sugar. It's readily available, converted to glucose. All right. So alcohol, except very occasionally, I'll let patients have a little glass of vodka once or twice a week. I'm not, and let me tell you why I'm so easy about diet, because a lot of people are very compulsive. I followed patients who were absolutely obsessed with their diet. They wouldn't eat a single mushroom. You know, they wouldn't eat anything that had a drop of vinegar in it, okay? And I followed them over a period of time, and I've compared them to a population of patients who just have not been that compliant. Basically, they've done okay, but one of their kids will have an ice cream cone, they'll take a bite, you know, and they'll have a sandwich. Now, bread, what is bread? Bread is flour, yeast, and sugar. Not something that you want to put into your body if you have candidiasis. So they have a sandwich once or twice a week. All right. I don't see that significant a difference in their course over a period of time. If I did, I'd say to them, you have to stay within these dietary guidelines. Don't eat any bread. Don't drink any alcohol. I haven't seen it. Now, maybe some other doctors had a different experience than mine. I've been treating this stuff for 12 years and following these patients fairly carefully. And as long as they, by and large, shift from simple carbohydrates to complex carbohydrates. What's a baked potato? Baked potato may have 20,000 carbons in it. You know how long it takes the body to metabolize that down to 6-carbon glucose? A baked potato is time-released energy. That's what it is. It's time-released sugar. And so these fluctuations in glucose levels when people eat fruit and, you know, bread and alcohol and cakes and candies and pies and so forth, that stabilizes when you draw upon grains, oats, rice, you know, starchy kinds of grains and pasta, things of that sort, again, with minimum amounts of yeast in it, as an energy source. And again, in moderation, I've not seen patients have that hard a time eating soy sauce once in a while, a little vinegar once in a while, mushrooms once in a while, and all these other things that are verboten and forbidden on the Candida program. Now, maybe my patients would get better a week or two sooner. For them, it's not worth it, because to have to stay with that strict a dietary regime is so stressful to them that the stress, it sort of trades off against the benefits of complying with the diet. So I tend to be a little bit on the easy side about the diet, but let them know the simple carbohydrates are out. You can't just feed this stuff.
What about Nutrasweet instead of regular?
That varies highly, all right? There are some people that are polyallergic, and they may have lactose intolerance that may be real sensitive to dairy. Some people may have. The most common things that people are, most common food allergies that people have are dairy products, eggs, wheat, and peanuts. If you're eating peanut butter, check it out, okay? It turns out to be a real common food allergy. And think about what we're talking about. We're talking about psychoneuroimmunology, all right? If you're eating a food that your system is allergic to, that's a stressor. That's just like a predator coming in and attacking you, right? In terms of the adrenals, in terms of the thymus, the thyroid, the endocrine system, and so forth, eating a food you're allergic to is like being beaten up. It's another demand on the immune system, which has already been weakened from this virus or this parasite. So that's a very individual kind of thing. And within the constraints of a person's allergy history, you may have to make some dietary restrictions along those lines. But I'm surprised to see that basically how much freedom people have if they stay away from these really simple carbohydrates, stay away from a lot of the food additives as best they can, and shift to complex carbohydrates. I'll tell you another thing that I found very helpful, and I don't have time to go into this today, but in this particular population of patients, there's an old saying, what is it? It's breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. The other thing is having to do with food combining. And again, this is purely anecdotal, but I find some patients report to me, and you know, they're doing their own experiments. They're trying all different kinds of stuff out. And I'm just their doctor, just tracking them, okay? But I'm beginning to see that this makes some sense. What some people are saying is, I'm having a high carbohydrate load for breakfast, because that's going to be my energy source for the day. I'm going to have a lot of oatmeal, okay? Or I'll have a bowl of rice, you know? I'll have rice for breakfast. It's really good. And if I season up with a little cinnamon and things like that, I'll use a quarter of my banana or whatever. But they'll have complex carbohydrates for breakfast. They'll have their proteins for lunch. And they'll have lunch sort of like the Europeans do. And they'll have a good, relatively high protein lunch. They'll use a little bit of their fruit, you know, or some of their nuts. And again, trying to stay with the more complex carbohydrates, snacks in between. And then they'll eat a very light dinner, generally soup or vegetable soup or salads or things of that sort. And they say it's just really, really helped a lot. I don't say that that's for everybody. But one of the nice things about it, if you think about it, when you're mixing foods and you're taking protein and carbs and fatty acids and amino, you know, the body's got to secrete this whole melange of digestive enzymes and other ingredients to properly digest these foods. And some of those things may interact with each other. If you're getting primarily a carbohydrate load, that's one kind of set of enzymes. If you're taking all your fats in pretty much at one time, they're lipases and fat-dissolving enzymes. A buddy of mine says that probably the single most important nutrient that we all eat, all should be eating, are enzymes because of the way that our food is being prepared. Look, I don't know if I believe this or not, but he's a former chief of allergy at Scripps, so he's got good markers. What he said, look, you can eat all the eggs that you want and never raise your cholesterol. He said, you can have all the beef you want and never raise your cholesterol. There's one little catch. You have to eat the eggs and the beef raw. Okay, think about it. In the eggs, in the whites of the eggs, are lipases, are fat-dissolving enzymes. When we cook an egg, we denature the protein. That's why the whites turn white. And these enzymes are very temperature sensitive. We kill those enzymes. So we end up with a food which probably in its original form as an uncooked egg is fairly balanced, and it's giving you ingredients to digest the fats that you're taking in and the yolk, right? When we cook it, now we've got a very strange food which has a lot of cholesterol and a lot of lipids, a lot of fat in it, and none of the ingredients are surviving that are there to digest that fat. That's why probably a third of the cholesterol in our diet comes from eggs. So enzyme supplementation can be very helpful along these lines too. Exercise. You know, you'd say, God, well, how can somebody with fatigue exercise? It's another one of those kinds of things, you know. It's sort of like telling people to drink enough water. They say, well, I'm urinating so much, I don't want to drink more water. And what you find very paradoxically is the more water they drink, the lower is their frequency of urination. The volume may go up, but the frequency goes down. All right? And it's the same kind of thing. You say, I'm so fatigued, how could I exercise at all? Well, what I find in this population, and it's why I really love working with these people, is as a group, this is an incredibly willful group. Because most of them, if they had their way, they'd stay in bed all day. And the reason that they get up at all is out of pure willfulness. Pure willfulness, pure mind power that forces them to get up and do what they have to do during the day. This is a really, in a funny sort of way, a very strong character, characterologically, of people with very strong character. And so when you say to them, okay, you've got to exercise, they'll buy into it and they'll try it. And again, paradoxically, what they feel is the more they're able to move their body, the more energy they have. And I won't go into all the derivations of muscle physiology and glucose metabolism, but I'll just say you can make a real good case for it. What do I mean by exercise? It means a walk around the block at dinner time. You know, I'm not talking about weightlifting, aerobics classes, or any of those kinds of things. I'm talking about really basic, a large muscle exercise, walking, you know, walking quickly, climbing stairs instead of taking the elevator, little things like that. But the more exercise, the better their glucose metabolism cycle is. Stress management is extremely important. And for every one of my patients, I feel it's essential that they learn to relax themselves completely in 5 to 8 seconds. Why 5 to 8 seconds? Because then they'll do it. If they have to meditate for an hour, they won't do it. All right? And it makes absolutely no sense for me as a doctor to give people a lot of things to do that they won't do. They just feel it's another failure experience, you know, and just... So we do what Pavlov did to his dogs. We condition them to relax. And I'll show you the biofeedback lab that we use and so forth. But it's amazing. People can train themselves, just like Pavlov did the dogs when they ring a bell to salivate. You can train yourself to relax on command. And like anything else, it takes a couple sessions to learn it, but it's a fantastically important part of being able to take some of the demand off the adrenals and some of the other organs of the body to learn stress management. People need psychological support. This is not an easy thing to go through. As they're going through a detoxification, purging process, and that's what I'm going to spend the next few minutes talking about, because to me, this is really definitive therapy. There are not a lot of cures in medicine. It's a sad thing. In fact, I only know of a couple. I know that penicillin is 100% curative to strep throat, all right? But it's one of the few guaranteed 100% cures in medicine. We just don't have too many. And the regime that I'm going to run through with you now, and I'm going to, those of you, you might want to get some paper and pencil handy, those listening on tape, because I'm going to give you quite specific information about what we found helpful, is as close to a curative regime for candidiasis as we've been able to find. And it goes like this. The three things that we use to get the candida out of the body are, number one, nutritional factors to starve it, to deprive it of its glucose source, because we don't want it to continue to proliferate. Number two, nutritional substances, which for various reasons kill off the candida. They're antifungal.
Can you repeat number one again?
Number one is dietary restrictions to starve the suckers, basically, to reduce the availability of glucose so that these things can't feed and reproduce. Number two is you go after it with a barrage of nutritional supplements, which I'm going to review in just a minute, which has the result of purging this stuff out of the system. You want to get it out of the body. And number three is immune support, which is really important to make sure it doesn't come back. And that's from the, again, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to put people through active treatment program if they're going to just deal with it again in 3 to 6 months. That's not cost effective and it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're looking for a long-term resolution of the problem. Right. Any of you who've read Crook's book know that he usually talks about 3 to 5 years to clear candida out of the body. In the regime that we're now looking at, we're looking at 3 to 6 months. And I will tell you, one of the reasons I'm excited about it is it's one of the most satisfying aspects of my practice, because these people are born again. They are absolutely born again. And they all tell me the same thing. I haven't felt this good since I was a teenager or even a kid. I have a lot of patients that as teenagers were given antibiotics for acne and have probably had candidiasis for 20 years, 15 or 20 years. Never knew what it was like to feel good. Just thought that's the way everybody feels. Never knew, you know, that they had this immunologic ball and chain around their ankle that was affecting everything that they did until they, once you feel good, you know the difference, all right? So let me tell you the things that we do for each of those. I've reviewed some of the nutritional restrictions. And again, as I said, you don't have to be obsessive compulsive about it, but shifting to complex carbohydrates, watching out for allergic substances that can put an additional demand on the immune system, and being conscientious about the diet and willing to experiment with different kinds of things, that's an important component. The second is, I'm going to review for you the regime that we use to go after it, okay? The active antifungal that we use is caprylic acid, capricin or caprylic acid. We're using a protocol that was developed in Toronto. And like the people, like other researchers who have worked with this protocol, we just find it so incredibly effective and benign. It's very, very safe. And to me, medicine is about risk-benefit ratios, all right? If the risks are real low, I'm willing to roll the dice, and that's why I'm open to acupuncture and biofeedback and hypnosis. I mean, this is very low-risk medicine, much less risky than, you know, some of the more invasive procedures that we do. And fortunately, this whole protocol is extremely low risk. And the nice thing about it is I can encourage patients to give it a try, knowing that the very worst thing that will happen is it doesn't work for them. All right, they're not going to end up in a hospital somewhere with liver failure. All right. So this is the regime that we use. We use caprylic acid. And we are using what the Toronto group used, which is it's a product called Caproil. And I don't even know if you can get it in this country. We get it from Canada. But it's derived from olive oil and coconut oil, and they extract the caprylic acid from it. And it's a very powerful, very active antifungal form of it. Right? And so that's one ingredient. All this stuff goes into a cocktail or a milkshake that people drink initially once and then ultimately twice a day. Along with that goes something called psyllium. Now, psyllium is a soluble fiber. Unlike oat bran, which is an insoluble fiber, it tends to have very little irritability on the gut. And interestingly, I started taking psyllium to lower my cholesterol. I lowered my cholesterol 90 points just from taking psyllium. Psyllium is about 4 to 6 times more effective than oat bran in lowering serum lipids. It has a high affinity for bile salts. And most of you probably know it in products like Metamucil, because it's a stool softener. Psyllium holds water. It's colloidal. It holds a lot of water. And when we give caprylic acid with psyllium, it gets the candida hiding out in the diverticuli of the colon. Look at it this way. The colon is this tube, right? And in this tube are these little pockets called diverticuli, all right? And when you give a drug like nystatin, which you take orally and it goes along the lumen of the colon, yes, it will break down the cell walls of any of the yeast that it comes into contact with, all right? But what about the stuff tucked away in these little pockets? It doesn't get them. So after you give a dose of nystatin, sure, after a period of time, these little spores of yeast are going to start to colonize again, and that's why it comes back. And that's why people like Crook, and I can't get him to consider these other possibilities yet, but that's why they put people on nystatin for years, literally years, all right? And to me, I'm really not comfortable giving people chronic medication if there's some other way to handle it. That's just my particular personal bias on it, all right? So what happens is you give people a bolus of psyllium and lots of water, and what do you think happens? The psyllium gets saturated with the caprylic acid, and it expands in the colon, and it pushes the caprylic acid up into the diverticuli, and really kind of distends the colon. It goes and it on a search and destroy mission, basically, and places that caprylic acid into physical contact with yeast that's colonized in various parts of the GI tract. We also give a supplement called bentonite. And bentonite is a clay-like substance which has a very high affinity for organic chemicals like aldehydes. It's a lot like activated charcoal. You know, charcoal filters because it has a high surface affinity. Well, we don't give charcoal to humans except in cases of life-threatening poisoning, because charcoal is incredibly irritating to the gut. You think about activated charcoal going down your intestines, right?
What about all those water purified things that have charcoal that's supposed to be going through the charcoal?
Well, that's fine as long as it's in the filter. It's not in your body.
Oh, it doesn't come out, you know, once that stuff goes through the charcoal filter?
No, it shouldn't. There should be screens, micropore screens that prevent that from happening. If children take a dose of poison, we're going to give them charcoal rather than have them die, all right? But I'm saying for chronic administration, you don't want to use charcoal because it's irritating. Bentonite is a clay-like substance, completely inert, and it has a high affinity for these toxic substances. So you basically it draws them out in the stool rather than getting into your circulation. Large amounts of water. Now, the other things that we add into the shake are activated Lactobacillus acidophilus, which, is, as I said, colonizes in the small intestine, and Lactobacillus bifidus.
Activated
means it's a live organism. You know, people say, oh, well, I eat yogurt, right? Read the label on your yogurt that has acidophilus. And if that stuff was pasteurized, guess what? The acidophilus is dead, all right? Both of these organisms should be, I don't even like capsules because I don't trust it. And I don't trust a whole lot, I have to say. The source that we get is from a company called Natron. And they send it to us in containers that are packed in dry ice and refrigerated and so forth. And it turns out that if you take a bottle of acidophilus, if you go to the health food store, make sure it's in the refrigerator section, all right? If you keep it at room temperature, it'll lose half its viability in about a month. If you keep it in the refrigerator, it'll keep 95% of its viability for a year. All right, it's very temperature sensitive. So it's no big deal, you know, if you're driving around your car for a couple hours or you're in an airplane. A couple hours isn't going to make a difference. But generally speaking, you want something that's going to contain between 7 and 10 billion organisms per teaspoon. That's activated. All right. And I again recommend, Natron is continental yogurt. They're the people that originally brought it over from Bulgaria. And are they fanatic about their organisms, which I like. Because if I'm going to give something to patients, I want to make sure I'm giving them something that I know is going to work for them and is viable. All right. So basically, let me give you the prescription here. All right. In 8 ounces of water, not juice. Why not juice?
Sugar.
Right. In 8 ounces of water, all right, you put in, as an initial dose, about half of a teaspoon of caproil or some type of caprylic acid, a tablespoon of bentonite. You can get bentonite at health food stores. Caproil, I have not seen it here. I've not seen it, but there are other sources of caprylic acid from health food stores. And if you have difficulty and you want to try it, we have it here. Yes, you could probably open a capsule if you got a reliable source of caprylic acid, all right? But you're going to have to titrate that, and I'll tell you what I mean by that in a minute. I'm just talking about an initial dose. So 8 ounces of water, about half a teaspoon of caproil, a good tablespoon of bentonite, and I'd start off with a teaspoon of psyllium. Now, psyllium you can find in the health food stores, too. It's called Colon Cleanse. You know, there's a lot of psyllium products. There's some difference as to whether you use psyllium seed or psyllium husk. Again, I use the product that comes from Canada because I know it's been tested and I know it works and the stuff's cheap. You know, it's like 15 or 16 bottles, dollars for a fairly good-sized jar of it. The one other thing that we add to it, now remember I said the third factor was to enhance the immune system. We use a homeopathic preparation called Biodex, which is inactivated candida. I don't know, kind of goes beyond the scope of our talk tonight to talk about homeopathy, but what I'll say is that it's our belief that this stimulates antibodies to Candida. Just like if you give somebody a large amount of smallpox, they get smallpox. If you give them a tiny amount, they develop antibodies to smallpox, and it's preventive, okay? In the same way, we give people a very little bit, a very tiny amount of a activated, deactivated Candida, which stimulates their immune system. And when their immune system goes after the stuff that we put in their supplements, it also goes after the stuff that's in their gut. And over a period of a couple of months, we continue to increase the doses of the homeopathic. Starting at 5 drops, we'll take them all the way up to 40 drops. We'll increase the dose of caprylic acid from 1/2 teaspoon once a day to 1 teaspoon or even 2 teaspoons twice a day. We'll increase the dose of bentonite, starting with 1 tablespoon to 2 or 3 tablespoons. Bentonite's great stuff. I have 6 children. And when they go to Magic Mountain or Knott's Berry Farm or someplace like that, they eat all the junk just like all everybody else's kids do, because we don't feed them that stuff at home. And so when they get out, you know, they like to get out and they squirrel away some money and they eat a bunch of junk and they come back and they always look green. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of that day, they have a kind of look on their face. And a tablespoon or two of bentonite, and literally within 20 minutes, they're fine. I mean, it's really great for indigestion and so forth. It's really a good product.
Who makes this Biodex?
Biodex is made by a company called Molecular Biologics. You have to get it through your doctor or through us. The Bifida and the Acidophilus, let me talk to you about that for a minute. You can mix them together in the same drink, but don't mix them together in the same bottle, because they tend to compete for media. These are living organisms that are feeding off media that's in the bottle. And so if you put them together, they'll tend to compete with each other. So if you get bottles of this stuff and you say, oh, I'm going to travel, I'll just mix all this stuff, pre-mix it, don't do that. It'll lose its effectiveness. But you can take, to this day, I'd say 2 or 3 times a week, I take 1/2 teaspoon of Bifida and 1/2 teaspoon of Acidophilus, and I'm not symptomatic. I just think it's part of, you know, helping my colon make all those VIPs and all those other little peptides and, you know, all the good things that it wants. I don't have problems with my digestion at all.
Were you ever symptomatic?
I had Candida. I didn't know about it until I started getting involved with this stuff. Yeah. So you have to play with the dosage, play with the amounts a little bit. You have to individualize it. This is not Big Mac therapy where everybody pulls into McDonald's and, you know, gets a protocol. It really has to be individualized for each client. But on this particular regime, let me tell you what we see happens. Let me finish with the treatment regime. The third thing that we find very, very helpful is to do acupuncture. Let me tell you why. There's a type of acupuncture that was actually developed, came out of Europe rather than out of China, called auricular therapy. It just involves stimulating certain points, acupuncture points on the ear. And it is to date the most powerful immune adjuvant technique that we have found. That is a way to stimulate the immune system. I'd say it's probably comparable to interleukin-2. It's probably comparable to, you know, a lot of the drugs that we're using as immune supporters, immune stimulants, which have nasty side effects. Acupuncture does not have nasty side effects when properly administered. And again, looking at that risk-benefit ratio, you'll see about a 4-fold increase in macrophage activity, about a doubling of helper-suppressor T-cell ratios. All the immune constituents that we look at are really tremendously enhanced by acupuncture. And it makes sense. I mean, think about it for a minute. When the integrity of the body is violated one way or another, something goes through the skin, the skin produces what's called an injury potential. There's an electrical phenomenon that occurs here. There's a streaming of these charged ions, of these negatively charged chloride ions, positively charged sodium potassium ions, and so forth. And again, with these informational peptides and neurological effects and so forth, the body gets mobilized because it doesn't know what invaded it. It doesn't know if it's the fangs of some sort of predatory animal that injected poison. It doesn't know if it's a pricker from a plant that can produce an infection or a toxin, and the immune system gets stimulated by it. When you use this particular type of acupuncture called auricular therapy, and it's just, as I say, certain points in the ear, it is really a powerful immune adjuvant technique, and I think it's it's one of the most helpful ways that we support people when they're going through this challenge. Because I have to tell you, over the period of 3 to 6 months, especially for the first 2 months, especially for the first 6 to 8 weeks, it's a bitch. And that's a medical observation, all right? It's not easy. I mean, you're at war. You're at war with the parasite that's in your body. And you're trying to juggle your blood sugar levels, so you're keeping them as low as you can so as not to feed the candida, but trying to keep them up so your brain can function well, and you can think clearly, and you can be physical. But, you know, it's a roller coaster ride. And sometimes, you know, your blood sugar gets too high and you get anxious and irritable and affected by it. And sometimes it's low and you get fatigued and depressed and so on. And it's a time when you need a lot of support. And that, during that particular phase, I find acupuncture particularly helpful because you're also pumping out a lot of endorphins. All right, what does that do? It raises your tolerance to it. This is parenthetical, and I'll just lean on my pain control work because that's mostly what I do. See, endorphins have nothing to do with pain and everything to do with suffering. When we give patients a shot of morphine, which is what mimics the endorphin response, patients will say, well, it still hurts, but it doesn't bother me. We haven't blocked their pain. This is not an anesthetic. It's an analgesic. What we've done is we've enhanced their tolerance to pain. That's what endorphins are about. Endorphins reduce suffering. So when you have somebody who's going through active treatment for candida and they feel like hell and they're roller coastering and fluctuating and so on, if we can get some acupuncture into them twice a week and get their crank out their endorphins, they handle it. And what you find is a very interesting phenomenon. I haven't published on this. I want a few more cases before I do, but typically after about 3 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks, depending on how serious the case is, patients have what we call a clearing day. And it's a very clear-cut phenomenon. They wake up one morning and it's like the fog has lifted and they feel great. All right? And they will always do something extremely uncharacteristic. They'll come in, they'll say, I filed all my IRS receipts. I washed the windows in my house. I cleaned out my garage. I painted my living room. Something that was just unthinkable, all right? And they come in, they rant and rave, and they're just feeling great and so forth. And then the next day, they feel like hell. All right? Once they have a clearing day, once they know that it's possible for them to feel great, they don't have any problem staying with the diet. They don't have any problem with staying with the rest of it. They want it. Up to that point, it's really a matter of faith because you're feeling lousy and your energy levels are fluctuating all around. The acupuncture will take the edge off a lot, strengthen you immunologically, but you got to tough out, you know, those first couple of weeks till you get to the clearing day. Once they get to the clearing day, to me, that's kind of a final stamp on the diagnosis, all right? I always see it. If it's truly candidiasis, I always see it. And I've probably treated a couple hundred patients by now. I'll always see a clearing day after a couple of weeks when their blood sugar is just right. And as I say, over a period of time what happens, and this is how I can tell prognostically when they're turning the course, when people start telling me more about their bad days than about their good days, they're on the good side of it. You follow what I mean? In other words, in the beginning they're telling me about their good days because that's an unusual event. Thursday was, I felt great Thursday. You know, I worked full day and I came home and I cooked dinner and gee, I was still, you know. When they start saying, you know, Tuesday wasn't so good. You know, I was really tired and I had a headache and I was a little symptomatic myself. They're telling me about their bad days. It means they're having more good days than bad days. And as I say, once people have that clearing day, they are really motivated to get more of it. They want it.
In the acupuncture, why the mm-hmm. ear versus anywhere else?
Because it is the most powerful form of acupuncture for stimulating the immune system that way. Yeah. Actually, for pain relief, too. It's a very powerful form. There are 5 nerves that innervate the ear, including a branch of the vagus nerve, which diffusely innervates the viscera and so forth. There's some very interesting neurophysiologic evidence about how acupuncture works now. Acupuncture, see, in medicine, when you see something and you don't understand how it works, we call it magic. Once we understand how it works, we call it science.
It's like your foot, on all different spots of your foot, it's supposed to go to all different parts of your body.
Acupuncture is becoming very scientific now because we know about thalamic mechanisms and so on. I've given you kind of an overview about this. As I said, I think that Canada is real. I think that it's a major component in many people that are experiencing chronic fatigue. Some of them are referred in by their doctors because they have depression and so forth and so on. And even as a psychologist, when I diagnose Canada, my attitude is, treat this first. And when the Canada's out of your system, we'll deal with whatever's left, if anything. And I'd say 90% of the time, the emotional problems they're having, the depression, the anxiety, the irritability, the panic attacks, the sleep disturbances, the physical symptoms, the headaches, the fatigue, the malaise, you know, this stuff is gone. And I will tell you that these are very grateful patients. A few years ago, if you were driving along Sunset Strip, you might have seen a billboard with my picture on it, because these patients come in promising everything, you know. I have a billboard service. If you help me, I'm going to have your picture up there. And they are just terrifically grateful.
Now, are you saying that you shouldn't take antibiotics anymore because of this is what's kind
of... Let me tell you how I had... No, I'm not saying that at all, because there's some circumstances where you take antibiotics. But I would talk to your doctor. If it's a localized infection like a sore throat or something that you can culture it, do a CNS, a culture and sensitivity, and choose the least powerful antibiotic. Penicillin is a great antibiotic. You don't have to give tetracycline or Keflex.
What about amoxicillin?
It's stronger than you may need, all right?
All my kids are sick, and it seems like that's the only medicine the doctors ever prescribe.
Okay. If you do use antibiotics, what's important is that you give very aggressive supplements of both Bifida and Acidophilus.
Oh.
And not only for the 10 days that you're on the antibiotics or your kids are on the antibiotics, but for 3 or 4 days after you stop the antibiotics. I will tell you that in a few years, every doctor is going to be required to give Lactinex or some pharmaceutical grade Acidophilus and probably Bifida a few years after that, whenever they prescribe antibiotics.
Now, can we get this stuff here today? The stuff you were talking about?
I will send you to your local health food store. If you want to get stuff from me, I can only prescribe it for you if you're a patient of mine.
How do you become a patient of yours?
Yes.
You want to sign up to do the acupuncture type of deal.
This is generally what I recommend, and this is the way that I operate on it, because I don't think everybody that comes in with fatigue has got candidiasis. All right, and my basic philosophy is, if it's not broken, don't fix it. All right, I am a minimalist when it comes to therapy. And a great advocate of self-management. That's one of the reasons we do these lecture series. And I'll tell you everything that you need to know, because I think you're well-served, we're well-served when we're all better able to take care of ourselves. All right. So to me, a lot of this is an educational process. The way that I like to proceed is I'll see patients for an hour to do initial evaluation. I charge $150 for that. If you have any medical records, any blood tests, any of those kinds of things, I ask people to bring them along and take a look at it. There's some forms that I have people fill out in advance, including the questionnaire and the Crook book, to bring with them on that first visit. And then we sit down together for an hour, and I take a good history and do a physical exam. And, you know, one of the things that you start to look for is certain things that you begin to look for. If you have a white coating on your tongue, when you look at the fundi, I mean, there's different things that you begin to see in this population. And at the end of that, I'll tell people what I think, sort of my best guess as to what extent Canada is involved and what it's not. And again, looking at their other allergies, their other sensitivities, the work demands, family demand. I mean, you know, some people are in a situation where they can just go after it like gangbusters, and they say, just get rid of the damn thing, and we can do it aggressively. Even if I may be laid up in bed for a day or two, I want to get this stuff out of me. Other people can't afford to do that, and they need to do it over a longer, they say, look, I'm going to have to, for financial reasons or other kinds of reasons, do it over a longer period of time, and that's fine too. So generally what I'll do is I'll recommend a program. I have seen a few patients that come from the East Coast to see me, that come from places where I cannot see them on a regular basis. And I would do the best I can to get them started. I'll give them a bunch of supplements. We UPS supplements to them and keep them in supplied. They can't get the benefits of acupuncture and biofeedback and some of the other things. It's not as good a situation. And what I've often found myself doing is encouraging them to find a doctor where they live. And I educate their doctor. And I turn their doctor, I'll send the doctor the articles and turn them on to the literature. As many times as not, it's a chiropractor. And that's fine. But I want some health professional where they live. It's part of our missionary work, you know, because then they're going to benefit from this and start to treat other patients. And I'm very free with telling patients and other doctors, my suppliers, where I get this stuff from and so forth, because there are a lot of people that are unnecessarily miserable with this thing. And particularly when, as I say, so many of them respond so incredibly well to this very benign regime, there's no reason not to try it.
I'm sold just from what you said.
So what happens after 6 months, let's say your patients feel great, what about diet?
You want to hear the funny thing? And I'll tell you this because I don't keep any secrets from my patients anyway, although there's a part of me that's reluctant to tell you this because it may steer you on the wrong track. When patients are at maximum dose and we think that they're purged, all right, so they're taking 40 drops of the Biodex, they're taking their supplements twice a day, and they're basically feeling great, I say, okay, it's challenge time. And this is the one thing that they always look for over course of therapy. And I know for me it'd be a hot fudge sundae. There's not, it's hands down, it's clear. But for some people it's watermelon, some people it's freshly baked bread or a Danish, or, you know, everybody's got their thing that's on their forbidden list. And the one thing that also helps motivate people is I say, this is not a forever lifestyle. While you're in active therapy, no simple carbos. All right. But I say, okay, you're feeling great, let's go for that Danish now. And I will tell you that 90% of the patients tell me, I don't want it anymore. I say, what? You mean all this time you've been waiting, I'm telling you it's okay to go for the ice cream or the Danish or the watermelon or what? They said, I'm feeling too good. And I will tell you, although this was not a plan and I don't even know that it's necessary, about 90% of the patients stay with this eating program. They feel so good, they're not going to do anything to endanger that. Then when I look at the 10% who don't, it's very interesting to see what they do. Yes, they will have dessert when they go out to a French restaurant and they will get something off the pastry cart, but they'll have two bites of it. And it's so funny. I'll give you 2 seconds on sugar, all right? Sugar is a very toxic substance. When you take white sugar, this is a very artificial, this is a drug, all right? And a very interesting thing happens. You know, we have taste receptors for salt, for sweet, for bitter, for sour, right? When you're eating sugar, your sugar taste receptors become tolerant to it, and they become desensitized, and you cannot taste the natural sweetness that's found in foods. When you go on this program and you stop eating simple carbohydrates, things that are sweet, you regain that. And over a period, it's amazing how fast it is, but it's within a couple weeks. People tell me, you know, those carrots were really sweet. I never realized how sweet a carrot was, you know, or that green pepper. God, that green pepper, I'm eating green pepper for dessert. I can't believe how sweet a green pepper is. And to tell people this who hadn't experienced, it sounds like a bunch of baloney. I mean, nobody would believe that somebody would find a green pepper as, but the stuff is too sweet. By the time you've been on this program for a couple of months and you go and have a piece of pastry, you know, you'll take a bite or two and it's really, you've lost your taste for it. So even though it may not be necessary for people to do that, and they are able to have, I will tell you what also happens is once in a while people will have recidivism, like we've just gone through the holidays, right? Everybody was eating candy and See's candy. I mean, who can say no to See's candy? Be real. It's not easy, okay? And patients that were successful in the program, I get phone calls from them and so on. And what we find is that we'll put them back on the shakes for a week, maybe two max, and they're fine. We don't do the acupuncture. We don't, just clean it out. You know, they started to get a little colonization. Clean it out right away. They do fine. And I've followed patients for as long as about 10 years now. And this is a curative program. This is a purge. This is to get the stuff out of your system. Now, can you get it back? Yeah. Let me tell you how to get it back. Take large doses of antibiotics, all right, without taking Bifida or Acidophilus. Take Flagylgatris and some of these other very strong medications. Don't get enough sleep at night. Don't get any exercise. Eat only simple carbohydrates. Get under as much stress as you can that you find as intolerable as possible. Work yourself and a very essential ingredient, get into some very heavy-duty worrying, which is probably the most profound stressor that we put on the body. And yeah, it's possible to get it back. So I don't think there's anything that's 100% forever, all right? But as I follow these people, I'll tell you, there have been a real interesting population to follow, which is I've taken care of a group of people from the RAND Corporation. This is a think tank, all right? When they get brain fog, this is serious stuff, okay? Because all they do all day is read and write and think, all right? And it's been very interesting. I've tracked this group for about almost 7 years now. And their lifestyle is horrendous. They are called to the most remote places on the face of the earth with like 2 hours notice that they have to hop a plane and go to Zimbabwe. The food in Zimbabwe is very strange. The air flights are, this is like an incredibly stressful type of lifestyle. And to have to have your mind really sharp and clear, these are people that pay attention to these kinds of things, and they have done fantastically well over that period of time. When they are incautious, yeah, they will tell me that, you know, they'll come in, they'll pick up some supplements, and I'll say, well, you know, what's going on, and so forth. They'll say, I need to do this for a week or two. I've got a little bit of a flare-up. But it's pretty much self-managed. And to me, that's really the goal. The goal is to get me out of the picture. It's your life. You know, you make your choices as to what you're going to eat, what you're going to worry about, how you're going to live. I want to make sure you have the tools that will help you deal with those choices as best you can. And hopefully keep you out of the healthcare system. That's my goal. Questions or comments?
You take care of